This is Just In Case It Matters, the little podcast that's hoping to last. I'm Dan Liebarger. Our guest for this installment is Nellie Mackay. She's the London-born, New York-raised musician whose clever lyrics and chameleonic shifts in style make her difficult to categorize. As you hear with her 2004 tune, Sorry, Mackay can effortlessly meld Bach-like chord progressions with fleet-tongued rapping. You can hear all of that on the same song. But here's a sample from her 2010 album, Home Sweet Mobile Home. Now wait a second, that's a title we can relate to here in Kansas City. Mackay can play dozens of instruments, and she even does a cabaret show where she celebrates the work of the pioneering naturalist who wrote The Silent Spring, Rachel Carson. She's also played Polly Peachum in Brecht and Weill's Threepenny Opera. So it's not surprising that she can also act. She had a role in the 2007 Hilary Swank, Gerard Butler movie, P.S. I Love You, which also starred Kathy Bates, and she's currently starring in Downtown Express, which opens this weekend in her hometown of New York. Downtown Express also stars violinist Philippe Quint as a Russian immigrant. Here's a clip from the movie, which was directed by David Gruben and produced by Michael Hausman, who has among his credits Amadeus.
Ramona? What are you doing here?
Shopping for dinner.
At the garbage can.
There's always good stuff left over. But America's the land of plenty. Come on.
From the new movie Downtown Express, starring Philippe Quint and our guest Nellie Mackay. She called me from New York on the eve of her birthday last week. I started the conversation by letting her know that I, too, wrote for Huffington Post. That shows yet another area she's conquered. And we both also got a kick out of the fact that Huffington Post got its first Pulitzer Prize this week! Oh, okay. I'll calm down. Anyway, here's the conversation with Nellie Mackay.
Yeah, so, now tomorrow's your birthday, is that correct?
Yes.
At this point in your life, is there anything else you still want to accomplish?
No.
You've done quite a bit. I mean, in the last 5 or 6 years, you've done about five or six different things. I mean, you're even stepping into my territory by writing editorials now.
Oh, yes. What a nice place to be.
So what led you to write about the situation with public radio?
I've always appreciated it as a listener and then as an artist. I get artist in quotes, but it's, you know, it's music and culture for the people.
Yeah, but your stuff fits into so many different potential genres, and I guess it'd be tough for a commercial station to classify you.
Oh, yes. Well, it's no fun to be categorized, really.
Yeah, because, I mean, even in the middle of certain songs, you seem to change formats. Because how would you classify a song like Sorry?
Well, I find it annoying, but that's just me.
Okay, but how do you think people should look at them instead of putting a label like that on there?
Oh, I think it's quite natural for people to say, oh, what's it like, you know, when we hear about someone, we say, oh, what do they look like? I think that's quite natural, but it's fun to shake it up.
Yeah, and speaking of shaking it up, you're one of the two leads in Downtown Express. How did working on that vary from, say, P.S. I Love You?
Well, it was very hot where we shot and when we shot, and it didn't have Kathy Bates.
got some pretty capable thespians here. There's not anybody who say a marquee name.
That's fun too.
Yeah.
I just mean, Kathy Bates was a real presence.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. She can be like that. But, one of the things I thought might be kind of an interesting challenge for you is with your music, you're writing the material, and on your past few albums, you've been the producer. What's it been like working as part of a team instead?
Oh, I don't like it.
And why's that?
Oh, I like to make all the decisions.
Well, and that would fit, because don't you normally overdub yourself?
Overdub, yeah. No, it's not that I don't like people. It's just I like to make all the decisions. Overdub. You mean in music?
Yeah. Like when you do, like on a lot of your tracks, don't you play more than one or two instruments?
Oh, but that's a budget thing. Usually we run out of money, so...
One of the things is, though, it shouldn't be surprising that you could work well as an actress, because, it's your songs like David, for 2 seconds, you're George W. Bush.
Oh.
You do it all the time in your songs.
Well, thank you. It's nice to, I don't know, you just keep plugging away.
What I thought was kind of interesting, though, is when I, as I've been following your work, in some ways, your background is different than the one that Mr. Quint has. Your background, in some ways, seemed like Mr. Quint's background in the film, because you actually studied at the Manhattan School of Music. Is that correct?
I did, yes.
The background of your character in Downtown Express is a little, in some ways it's a little more mysterious than his is, but did your background, did you have a lot of the formal training that he has in the film?
Oh, of course not. No, and I wouldn't really say I studied at Manhattan either. I went there, but I didn't study much.
Ah. So what would it, you were actively performing during that period, weren't you?
I did start performing. Always looking for the easy way out.
Do you think, though, in some ways you actually may have chosen a harder path?
I hope not.
Because it's set in your hometown, you have, one of the things that's kind of distinctive about New York is it has such an active busking scene.
Yes.
With lots of street and subway musicians. And your band in the film takes part in that. Did you ever do anything like your character does in the film?
Oh yes. And you appreciate just the littlest amount people can give. So many people don't give anything, but, even a penny or a nickel, they add up.
Oh, no kidding. I know you play ukulele now, but how exactly was your busking set up when you actually... What was it, when you were performing in places like that, what kind of setup did you have? What the equipment or what instruments did you play?
Oh, I played cello. So
you played cello?
I brought a little stool. I don't really play cello, but I play enough for, basically need 10 minutes of material on the subway. So, I would do that. You could make about 15 an hour, but you could only play for about an hour. At least I could, so...
Oh, wow.
It didn't really work out.
Because, I noticed, what was it like working with him putting together the music that we actually hear on the film? Because he is pretty formally trained, is that correct?
Oh, yes. Philippe put up with me.
Because, I was remembering how I was... What kind of work did it take to where you guys sounded good together?
Oh... Well, I think it was quite easy. I think we all, liked each other and had a good time. And we'd go to Michael Bacon's house, and he'd have a lot of nice food for us.
That often helps.
Yes.
And you and Bacon teamed up on a lot of the songs. Is
yes.
that correct?
Yes.
And so having a collaborator on your writing, how did that kind of change your approach?
Oh, it was great. Well, he did most of the work and most of the writing, so I would just try to contribute something. No, but this was a really great experience. We really had a good time.
Certainly with what you've chosen to do for your cabaret shows, I really think it's fascinating that you jokingly called your cabaret show that's based on Silent Spring sort of a lighthearted look at pollution.
Right, pesticide poisoning.
Pesticide poisoning, yes. How did you first become interested in Rachel Carson and her work?
I read Silent Spring last summer, and I thought it'd be a good show.
Do you think that music is a good way to bring across some of the topics and these kind of delicate topics that you explore in your cabaret shows?
I don't know. I have to say, at the moment, I don't know what I'm doing.
Oh, okay. But, you seem to be doing... Whatever you're doing seems to be going well because you've gotten some really stellar reviews for those shows. Because you've played some interesting spots, and isn't one of your upcoming gigs going to be at a ukulele festival?
Yes, in Colorado.
Oh, cool. How recently did you pick up that instrument?
Long enough to play better.
That's cool. Now, as I followed a lot of the songs you've written, I've really been struck how a lot of them seem to have ironic perspectives in them. Because in one song you're jokingly lamenting that feminists don't have a sense of humor, but yet through the song you're proving that they can be funny as hell.
Right.
What do you think?
Oh, thank you. Well, that's kind. That's not. I didn't mean to say right. Yeah, that's nice.
Why do you think irony seems to work so well for you? Or what do you think you're drawn to it?
Well, I guess everything's so ludicrous. I think it's hard to write something serious.
But yet, if you take a look at, say, the example of Dr. Strangelove, it's a comedy, but it's hard to think of a movie that better illustrates the horrors of nuclear war.
Right, right. I guess, I don't know what to say, Dave.
Well,
I mean, yeah.
One thing that I was really excited about is when I had been reading about you playing Polly Peachum in the Threepenny Opera. How did that experience go for you? Because I imagine that must have been a pretty major commitment.
Yes, well, it's Brecht and Weill. It's the greatest musical ever written.
And what particularly appeals to you about that musical?
Well, it's all about before you preach morals, you've got to feed everybody first.
If I could get back to the film for a second, there was one thing I really admired because I'm a mediocre musician, but there was one thing I loved about it that sort of rang true, and I haven't seen this in a lot of musically related films. There was one scene where Sasha is playing guitar, and I can hear him hit some bad chords because he's still unfamiliar with the instrument.
Yeah.
How much of a conscious decision did you guys make to try to make the performances not seem too polished?
Well, Philippe's really good, so he was, he did a lot in the movie. For me, I think it takes no effort at all to not seem too polished.
Yeah, but part of the fun of seeing a busker is the fact that it's happening live in front of you and you're not going to see it again.
Right. Yeah, and the spontaneity. Philippe has incredible spontaneity. I'd really love to record something with him. And David, the director, he was just such a pleasure to work with. Michael Hausman, the producer, they kept that air of spontaneity. There wasn't it wasn't a stifled set.
Oh, interesting. Now, how closely did you and Philippe stick with the script? I mean, was there a lot of written dialogue for you to say, or how much did you have to, did you memorize it, or were we watching?
Yes, we memorized it. Yes. we mostly did the script, yeah.
Oh, okay. And, because, I mean, let's face it, if you could get your way through the Threepenny Opera, the idea that you could memorize dialogue would seem pretty bloody obvious. But to me, it was kind of interesting because I did like the fact that it did look spontaneous, but then again, if you're a good actor, you can make anything that comes out of your mouth sound like it's emerging for the first time. Would that be a correct statement?
Oh, I don't know. I think if you're a good director, you can give the film a kind of lifelike feel. I think that's what David did.
Actually, this is one. There was one thing you said earlier that really grabbed me. You said that a lot of what you did at, if I don't want to dig too far into your past, but it intrigued me. What exactly did you do while you were at Manhattan School of Music, other than you know, studying there? Because you said you were looking for sort of an easy way out.
Right.
Because what exactly were you doing other than studying?
I think you look back and you don't know where the time went, really.
No kidding.
Gee, I've no idea what I've done, really. I don't know where the time goes.
Do you sometimes have to look up your Wikipedia page and go, oh, yeah, that's what I did?
God, no, never Wikipedia. I boycott Wikipedia. I won't look up anything or anyone on Wikipedia.
No,
I think the whole Internet. Look, there are a lot of great people. They still don't have a computer. And, my God, it's worse than TV. At least the TV, you know, you stop at 200 channels.
So you,
and the Internet is deadly.
Internet's deadly. Well, yeah, there is sort of a, well, it's been sort of my source of income for a while, it still is sort of the Wild West out there.
Yeah, it's detrimental. I mean, they've found that people who spend longer online are more depressed.
No kidding.
Yeah, and, you know, it's rewiring our brains. You know, GPS is causing the mind to atrophy. People don't have their same spatial relations. They're not as aware of where they're going or where they're coming from now, because they rely completely on that voice or that device. And we're constantly bombarded by information. Any page you look at pretty much has ads on the side or other things you can click on the side. It's bad. It's bad news.
Yeah.
I understand people need to, but that's the other thing. With social networking sites, we're programmed to be social animals. It's like fat, sugar, and salt. These are things that naturally we would seek more of, but we are being preyed upon that. It's like the pornography industry. You know, we're naturally sexual creatures, but they make so much money exploiting that natural urge into something that it becomes an addictive thing. And it's the same with the social networking, it's the same with food things, it's the same, but it's just, I think with a computer, people still feel it's benign, but it isn't. It's tapping into something that, you know, is quite a natural, beautiful thing and turning it into a destructive habit.
Have you actually addressed that in any of your songs?
Oh, I don't see it does any good to address anything in any songs. Besides, I don't know how to write any songs anymore. Maybe Philippe will.
Oh, is there anything you do to try to keep yourself oriented despite this bombardment?
Drink.
Well, that's certainly one thing that can be done. You obviously have some legitimate concerns with things like cyberbullying and stuff like that. How do you keep up with what's going on in the world?
Oh, you mean in the world?
Yeah.
You said, so how do I keep up with things in the world?
Yeah.
I think at this point, we can't help keep up with things in the world. That's part of the shame of it. You used to be able to turn off the world.
It can be, like I said, you can get the feeling that you're not able to shut down. But one of the things I think that's really fascinating about you as a performer is you're exploring a lot of genres, or no, I shouldn't say genres, but you're exploring a lot of musical styles that were developed or...
I love that. I love old sheet music. I mean, who can say no to Irving Berlin?
Did your mom play some of that sort of music around you, or how exactly did you stumble upon his music?
Boy, I guess most of it came from my mother. Showed me a lot of old movies, and that's such a good thing to do for a kid. You know, especially those movies of the 30s and 40s, where the women and men, they were real partners, and the music was just delicious, and they were funny, you know. It wasn't so self-serious.
I noticed in a lot of your stage, you usually tend to wear retro outfits.
Oh, sometimes, sure. I wouldn't say, you know, there's been much consistency at all.
Hasn't been much consistency at all. Has anybody else approached you about doing other acting gigs like Downtown Express?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
You know, like I said, you did seem this band. I was just kind of curious if you'd seen anybody say, hey, we should try her out.
Oh, right. No, we're doing the show, and I'd like to make a movie of that. It's nice to be surprised, but you can't count on anything.
That's true, because you've always got to deal with investors and stuff like that. But do you think that some of a lot of your cabaret shows could potentially make interesting films?
Well, you know, I think watching David and Michael on this, the effort required is incredible, and it's inspiring and it's kind of daunting too. But man, did they pull it off, you know? And David put his heart and soul into this film, and you can feel it that you know he's a swell guy.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad it worked out for you. I would like to thank you for your. I really appreciate your time. If you haven't noticed, I've been following your work for a while. So, like I said, if some of the questions seem to come from Mars, that's why.
Oh,
but
no, your questions were fine. I just don't know how to, mostly I don't say much, though. So.
Well, do you think in some ways it's easier for you to write something down and maybe, get the ideas out that way?
Yeah, probably in some ways, yeah. Or drink. Yeah.
Is there a particular type of drink that you find really helps your writing?
Well, I like Caribbean coconut rum and soy milk.
Okay, yeah, that'd be a pretty decent combination. I'm more of a Corona drinker myself.
Ah, well, you're a real man.
Oh, good. I'm glad to know that. Anyway, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah. You should have a Corona now.
Oh, excuse me. I was just squeezing the lime into my Corona. That was Nellie Mackay talking about her music and starring in the new movie Downtown Express. By the way, if you like the music by her and Philippe Quint that I sampled throughout this broadcast, go see the movie, because there sadly isn't a soundtrack album. If you have any comments about what you've heard on this show, or just bored, I guess, you can write me at dan@justincaseitmatters.com. The theme music you're hearing right now is by Jackson Liebarger. This podcast is copyright 2012, Just In Case It Matters. I'm Dan Liebarger.